from the City of Angels near the Pacific Ocean. Good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Next hour, Kevin Randall joins us as we talk about government's UFO files. Fascinating program. Here's what's happening. Well, the French foreign minister says we have 500 days, just 500 days, to avoid climate chaos. Now, what does he mean? In a moment, award-winning weatherman Scott Stevens joins us to talk about climate change. Talking about climate change, Southern California firefighters fighting now five wildfires in and around San Diego, prompting at least 23,000 evacuation notices to residents, businesses, schools, parts of a Marine Corps installation at Camp Pendleton as well. Statewide drought, hot, dry Santa Ana winds, low humidity, and 90-degree-plus temperatures conspired to increase the number of wildfires, which began with 350 firefighters fighting a 1,500-acre wildfire in San Diego. And if you remember, and if you're out that way, help the animals as well. They need to get out of there. Veterinarian Dr. Jessica Vogelsang, of course, was in the San Diego area. She was evacuated last night. And Jessica, you can give us an update on the fire and some thoughts on animals. What a disaster.
It was very scary. I was evacuated yesterday from the Bernardo fires. I was fortunate to be prepared, so I got the dog and the cat and my kids out within 5 minutes. But there were some people today that were less fortunate that we were. We had wonderful firefighters that saved all of our homes, but I know that we have lost multiple homes in San Diego today.
Quick advice for people: if animals are out in the area and they see them, what do they do? Scoop them up? What can we do?
Well, the best thing to do is to really be prepared for your own animals. Don't put yourself at risk. Go trying to chase down a stray animal. But do know the numbers for local animal control and know that they are available to help.
All right, Jessica, and hold on for a minute because I'm going to read another story that we have posted at coasttocoastam.com. It's under our highlight reel. An incredible story of a California child pulled from his bicycle by an attacking dog, saved by his family's cat, which quickly rushed in and attacked the dog. You can see this video at coasttocoastam.com. I've never seen anything like it. Jessica, a cat going after a dog? There must have been a lot of love there with the cat and the little boy.
It was pretty amazing to see, and it really does put away that myth that cats don't care about us.
It was truly a remarkable story. I mean, what would make a cat go after a dog like that? I mean, what happened? What did the cat feel?
That cat must have really had a bond with that family and just had confidence in his ability to fight that dog off. So it is certainly an unusual behavior for cats.
Thank you, Jessica, and I'm glad you're safe from that San Diego situation. A lot of people are just in harm's way right now. But go ahead, take a look at that video. It's at coasttocoastam.com. It's unbelievable. You see the dog attack the little boy, and he puts some gashes in his leg. And then you see what the cat does. It's an amazing story. Rescue workers are hunting desperately for scores of Turkish coal miners still missing after an explosion caused a pit to collapse, killing right now at least 245 people. They are still looking for 120 others. The underwater search for the Malaysia Airlines Flight 370 on hold probably will be for at least 4 days because of a malfunctioning part of its submersible Bluefin 21 and a broken transponder on the Bluefin's mother ship. The Bluefin 21 currently is the only submersible looking for the Boeing 777, which was carrying 239 people when it simply disappeared on March 8th while traveling from Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia, to Beijing. Still a bizarre story there. As we have reported and predicted, following increased diplomatic tensions over Russia's annexation over the Ukraine's Crimea era, Russia is threatening to ban the U.S. from using the International Space Station. Now, I was talking with space historian Robert Zimmerman about that not too long ago, and now it's real, Robert. They're going to get tough.
Well, yes, George, but I have to clarify something. They are not kicking us off the space station. They were very clear about that. I posted on Behind the Black the actual transcript English translation of the transcript of Dmitry Rogozin's press briefing where he made these announcements. He said they're reconsidering, they were asked to extend their partnership with us through 2024. Their agreement goes till 2020, and they've said they're pretty much sure they're not going to extend the agreement. That's all they've said. They're not saying they're going to kick us off. They have said they're going to kick us out. We have GPS science stations in Russia. They want to set up science stations in the U.S. We haven't negotiated with them in good faith. They say they're going to kick us out of Russia if we don't agree. They're also saying now it doesn't matter whether or not we want to buy their rocket engines for our military launches. They're not going to sell them.
They're not going to sell
them. So this puts Lockheed Martin's Atlas V in a big problem. They don't have the engines. They've got enough engines for a number of launches, but they're going to run out at some point.
And what about the private sector? Can they help us yet?
Eventually, yes. I mean, SpaceX, with its Falcon 9, wants to make military launches, and that's all American-made. I think the U.S. government, if it had any sense, would start to agree to that. If I was Lockheed Martin, though, I would be pushing very hard to try to find a solution because they are screwed, essentially. They are going to be cut out of the launch business if they don't find a replacement engine.
BehindTheBlack.com, that's Bob Zimmerman's website. As the United Nations debates legislation that could outlaw killer robots, scientists are predicting that artificially intelligent systems could one day decide to kill humans for the greater good. Alex Jones reports at Infowars.com that in an article for Popular Science, Eric Sofci outlines a scenario whereby robot cars, for example, would decide to sacrifice their human owner in order to prevent a collision that could kill more people. It would make that decision. Google executive Regina Dugan is promoting the idea of microchipping you. These microchips would be implanted under the skin and allow the wearer's movements to be tracked and store information about them. Kind of reminds us of George Orwell's Big Brother Police State, doesn't it? According to a report drawn up by a team of academics, Britain's Information Commissioner says that within the next couple of years, our most important every movement, purchase, communication could be monitored by a complex network of interlinking surveillance technologies and chips. Sounds like the sign of the beast, doesn't it? Two Florida healthcare workers who came in contact with a confirmed MERS case and began showing flu-like symptoms, they have tested negative for the virus. But hospital officials are still awaiting test results from 18 healthcare workers from two Orlando hospitals who are being monitored for the symptoms. On Monday, the second U.S. case of the Middle East Respiratory Syndrome, MERS, was confirmed. The virus has killed 145 people elsewhere. 500 days now to avoid climate chaos, according to the French. What does that mean? Up next, the expert on weather, Scott Stevens on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. I'm George Norrie, climate change, chemtrails. Scott Stevens is an award-winning television weatherman. Decades ago, began investigating the claims of Lieutenant Colonel Tom Bearden that North America, us, being subjected to full-time weather modification. Here he is back on Coast to Coast. We're got lots to talk about. Scott Stevens. Hey, Scott, welcome.
Glad to be back in this season of spring with you, George.
You know, I just came back from Denver. I was there this weekend taping our Beyond Belief television shows, as you know about.
Oh, I did. A great guest
for us. And right in the middle of a snowstorm, 29 degrees, the middle of May.
It was 21 degrees this morning down in the San Luis Valley where I am.
What's going on?
It's just spring in the Rockies. It's just all it is, George. It's frustrating. You know, we'd really like to get it going, but it's a little bit slower happening out here.
So the French, 500 days to get our act together before there's climate chaos. What do they mean by that?
You know, it's an interesting comment, you know, coming from one who probably goes to Bilderberg and the sorts kind of meetings.
Yeah.
Is there something, is there already something, some date that they have seen through their time viewing, or is it actually an agenda, something that they want to trigger, some event that they're interested in? And that's where we're left speculating, because John Kerry was right next to him when this comment came out, and He was not interested in engaging the reporters or the audience whatsoever in this comment. So it's something that the American political machine is backing away from, you know, even faster than Marco Rubio.
Well, but, you know, by putting, you know, 500 days on it, how did they come up with that?
You know, there is a UN conference, and it is towards the end of September next year, September of 15. So that is some 500-ish days away. And, you know, the UN is good at setting out targets.
Yes,
you know,
they are.
In 10 years, we'd like to accomplish this. In 5 years, might we do that? You know, next year, let's come back and see if we've accomplished this task. So maybe that's what he's referring to, that, you know, if politicians, if we're up there to inspire or to move our population in a direction, then we need to give them a target. We need to give them a date, something to reach for. And maybe that is all he was doing. But in one sentence, left out there dangling, it has a lot of us a little bit curious, since some of us know a little bit more about what's happening with climate change, with CO2 gases, with geoengineering. You know, there's a lot of ingredients in this soup that this climate change that this guy referenced.
And the biggest ingredient, I think, Scott, the sun.
The sun. Truly the sun. I'm with you in this one, George. You know, there's a lot of information that goes back years and years and years saying that it's the sun. It is the sun that triggers changes in our planets and hence the solar system's climate. And all these planets are showing changes of something.
Yes.
What it is, I don't know, but we know. And it may be that there's a force, that it is this dark matter that astrophysicists are looking at, or it's the etheric field that those in the esoteric are aware of. Maybe it's that field that is we're going into, and it's that will trigger changes, and it happens regularly depending on where we are in our cycles.
And you know, Scott, I've said time and time again that nobody wants pollution.
No.
At all. And I think a lot of people who believe in the man-made climate change theory, and I'm talking about the non-scientists, now, the ones who aren't profiting, it's just people. I think a lot of them are confused between climate change and pollution. I think there's a big difference there.
And that's a fair point to bring up. And that is something when I was on TV and doing the mainstream thing and, you know, all about global warming, and yes, we've got climate change, and if this is the trigger, then yes, we need to do something about it. And, you know, this Earth's atmosphere just does not need to be continually used as a toilet.
I agree.
And that's what we're doing. It's a very simple thing. You know, I had a fascinating discussion a couple of months ago with a guy from Boulder in the National Centers for Atmospheric Research. And we had to talk about the sun. We had to talk about climate change. And George, he was frustrated that he could not get their message, the guys in Boulder, their message to be picked up by the media, by the people. And I said, all right, how about this? How about the sun as a reason for the climate change? Anyway, he went off on a bit of a list, and, you know, we've looked at this, and we come back to it, and we just don't see the changes in the sun that could be responsible for what we see happening on Earth. And then I asked, well, what about contrails? He's like, oh, Scott, that's interesting. But every 5 years, I dig into the literature, look at the papers. And his result was, we don't really know what they'll do, warmest or coolest, but his gut instinct was that they'll warm us. I said, all right, what about chemtrails? And he gave me a funky look. I said, all right, let me grab my camera. For the next 30 minutes, George, I showed him pictures of what was happening in the sky. Funny shapes of clouds, odd patterns, disturbances or rips or tears that were happening with these chemtrails that other planes would come along and hit precisely. He's like, oh, you know, we're not briefed on any of this. We're not briefed on these things that are happening in the sky. And so the other story we talked about or looked about was what is happening in the Antarctic with these ice sheets. And that has been the big concern, is that we will see a rapid increase in sea level from the melting of either off Greenland or Antarctica. But what they're finding is that there's a change in the air currents in the South America, in the Southern Hemisphere, that has changed just enough to change how the water is impacting the surface of that continent. and that warmer water is slowly eating away underneath the ice sheet.
That's right. Where other areas on this planet are changing as well,
yes.
But in opposite. Instead of melting, they're getting colder.
They're getting colder. And so we can't make this blanket statement that, yes, the planet is warming. We just can't say that because there are pockets where it's cooling and there's pockets where it is, yes, warmer. And then we have one year, like this year, where the eastern United States is as cold as it has been in nearly a lifetime.
And in the Midwest, I was there right after Christmas. I headed back to Los Angeles, brilliant on my part, by the way, and they got hit with the coldest winter in 20 years.
Yes. And contrast that with the previous years, which have been record warm. And when you add warm to cold, you end up with normal. So where are we?
You know, our dear friend Robert Felix, who wrote the book Not by Fire but by Ice, continues to tell everybody we are in the beginning stages of a small ice age. What do you think of that, Scott?
I would agree, and I think it would behoove us to begin to build an infrastructure which could deal with winters like that which we have just endured. Whether it is smarter insulating of houses, not having 2x6 construction above ground, but in the ground, so we have some thermal stability. There's a story coming out of Norway when they were researching passive houses and how to insulate, and they realized that unless you're building these passive solar houses to get the gain from these southern exposures, that there's no way we can cut down on the emissions that we need to, or at least we're told we need to achieve a goal of maintaining CO2 stability.
Scott, why is this question of climate change so emotional? And let me give you an example.
Mm-hmm.
Couple people, you know, are at a restaurant or sitting at a bar, and they begin to talk about climate change. One believes that it's an Earth cycle. Another believes that, indeed, it's caused by man.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a discussion. It's a blow-by-blow fist fight. Why is it that way?
Well, because I would believe that they're both correct. We do have natural cycles.
What do they have to fight about it for?
Because we all want the person we're sitting across the table from to believe just as we do. And that'll never be the case.
Is it a moment of frustration because you can't get the other person to accept your view, so you have to try to pound him instead?
Well, that's one way to go about it, but I don't know if you'll have a friend when you're done pounding him. You know, and even within this quote-unquote chemtrail camp, there is vast opinions on what they're there for, on what these trails are up there for. And so if you can't have agreement on an agenda, then when you bring two regular folks talking about either A, it's natural climate change, or B, man-made climate change, you know, they're both right. It's not man-made because of the exhaust of our breath. That's just silly. I mean, that's going to be laughable in 20 years. We're going to look back and say, we spent how much money researching CO2? Seriously? It's going to seem that stupid, pure and simple stupid. And the other side is natural cycles. And most of us have been here to the length of time to see these things from one side of an ice age to another, to see the nuances, all the little waves and undulations that the planet is going to make as we drop into the ice age and then begin to come out of it.
It's safe to assume one thing. Mm-hmm. This is a violent weather planet, and especially what's going on right now in North America.
Well, I wouldn't agree. I wouldn't disagree with that at all. You know, we're into May. We're into tornado season. That's just where we are. I'm watching another storm. Well, it's emerging from the west. We had all of the violent weather in the Midwest in the previous couple of days. We're going to see almost a near repeat of this next storm.
Yeah, it doesn't stop.
Yeah, it drops into the west, but I don't think it's going to be quite as aggressive in moving into the plain states. And so I think this one will sit out west a little bit longer. The problem I see with it is California, in that they're on the dry side, the windy side.
Yep.
And I have empathy for those folks that are living there.
Oh, down in the San Diego area. It's unbelievable.
And this is just beginning, George. This is just the beginning of the dry season. And we've already got fires to this extent. I'm concerned. I'm seriously concerned.
All right, Scott, stay with us. We're going to take some phone calls from a lot of concerned listeners who are on both sides of the fence with regards to climate change, but we're going to take phone calls in just a moment here on Coast to Coast AM with Scott Stevens. We shall be right back. And welcome back to Coast. Scott Stevens with us. We'll take your calls as well. Scott, how did you get interested in weather? Were you one of those little boys who just loved it?
I was one of those boys who loved the Boy Scouts and who, through the Boy Scouts, got really attached to astronomy and meteorology, just doing those merit badges. Kind enough to start habits and got me a relationship with one of the local meteorologists in eastern Idaho. And, boy, that kind of set my life course. Very early.
You loved it.
I did. I really did. And I had this fascination with planes and aircrafts and models. You know, all of that started when I was, you know, 6, 7, 8, 9 years old. So toys of little boys can grow up to be careers for men. That's for sure.
Now, talking about things, chemtrails, what do you think they are?
I think they're markers. You know, I was watching the water vapor imagery today off the coast of California. There's this beautiful ridge of high pressure arcing up and over off the coast. And then there's these lines run all the way through it, all the way along the western extent, all the way to the north, across the top and down. They need these lines so they can see how all of these individual parcels of air are moving. And if those listening are curious and want to Google a meteorological term, the word would be vorticity, V-O-R-T-I-C-I-T-Y, vorticity. And when you look at the curvature or the angular momentum, the change from one parcel of air next to the next parcel and the next parcel, you run a straight line across them, you can figure out how they're all moving. It's elegantly simple. It's a beautiful system. I just wish it wasn't so toxic and didn't impact the weather so greatly. But it is a smart way to figure out what all of the discrete layers of the atmosphere are doing. And if you go onto your computer and look at the satellite imagery, the water vapor imagery shows the moisture that those trails collect and makes it very, very visible to see where they're engineering and locations that they're, quote-unquote, leaving alone.
Scott, we had a non-existent hurricane season. I think this coming season could be a disaster.
It could be. You know, that was kind of a gift last year to be left alone, the U.S. coast. And I know those forecasts are just coming out now, and they're anticipating a slower-than-normal hurricane season. But, George...
They were wrong before.
You know, I was so glad to get out of that business because the guys, Dr. Gray, up at Colorado State University, yeah. They're not forecasting the planet. They're trying to anticipate what this group of people doing that are geoengineering this planet. They're the ones
Good
in control.
Point. Good point. Let's take the calls. We'll go to Minneapolis, Minnesota. Chris is with us, east of the Rockies. Chris, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Yeah, Scott. I haven't seen you on your YouTube channel here lately.
I haven't done a lot with that. The next one I do is going to be on vorticity, but it might be a couple of months before that's out. There's other things happening that I have got my attention on. Sorry.
All right, and then another question is, when is Who in the World is Spraying coming out?
I don't know if Michael is going to get that done. You know, I talked to him 2-3 months ago, and he just is lacking the inspiration to get that going.
What is that, Scott?
Well, is the who in the world is spraying? You know, he did the what, doing the analysis of what's coming out of the sky, and then we kind of talked about the why. Although honestly, I was left wishing that there was a little more of the why in it, rather than just rehashing the chemical and then this is there. I really wanted more of the why in there, and the who, and he's in Hawaii now, and I just think he's taking a break.
Well, just, everybody honestly, needs that once in a while.
Everybody does.
Did you know Michael Rupert?
I did.
That's a sad story.
And yeah, he passed. And there's something happening here in Crestone, a couple of gatherings to honor his life.
And they say he took his life. Do you believe that happened?
That's new information to me. That's new information. That wouldn't surprise me. you know, just the way the world is going and so many people are just fed up.
I'm just suspicious of people who are so controversial, as Michael was. Who knows?
And get suicided.
Well, yeah. Who knows if he stepped on somebody's toes somewhere?
And to be, you know, George, this energy here on these mountains, it's intense. If you're not stable, if you're not, you know, clear and you haven't cleaned out a lot of your baggage, that happens. That stuff happens.
Springfield, Missouri. Talk about weather. Sharon's with us on the wild card line. Hi, Sharon.
Hello, Mr. Gary. I'd like to ask your guest two questions.
Sure.
Okay. One, about the chemtrails. And boy, do we ever have them here in Missouri. If this is contributing to water vapor, and if water vapor is the main greenhouse gas that's affecting global warming, then doesn't that make you think that there is an agenda behind this to enhance global warming so that it's a matter of control? And the second question is, a report came out saying that hurricanes, not in the Atlantic, so I'm assuming,
but on the Pacific,
are moving north. Wouldn't this also have a tendency to break the drought along the West Coast? I know in Texas, people there always say we need a good hurricane when they're going through drought conditions.
They do. I'm going to probably answer these in backwards order. Yes, that paper was released saying that in the Pacific, that those storms, those tropical storms, are reaching their maximum intensity at more northern latitudes. And it's not a big deal. It's like maybe 2 degrees latitude north, something on the order of 60, 70 miles. But nevertheless, it is statistically significant. And then getting water to California. Hurricanes need water that is at temperature thermodynamically. Hurricanes need water temperature to be in the 80s. Water temperature off the coast of California just is not that warm. And so we are very lucky to get tropical moisture onshore on the West Coast on the farthest southern tip of the Baja in Mexico. It is exceedingly rare to get that tropical moisture into California simply because the water temperatures are so cold. And in the summer, the jet streams are just not aligned to allow that to happen. They'll open up and they'll come into the east coast of the U.S. as they recurve after they come off that Cape Verde track. But it just can't happen to California. All right, now to clouds and the contrails creating them.
Who knows?
Who knows? Truly, George, because it can go both ways. You know, prior to the storm's arrival, they do, create these canopies of clouds that drastically cuts down the sun arriving prior to the storm's, arrival. And so the plants don't get the sunlight. They don't get the growth. But it can knock down the temperature. It can cool it. On the same thing on the other side with the addition of the cloud cover, it'll keep it warm on the other side of the storm. So I really think temperature-wise, it's a wash. It really is a wash, these clouds from these trails. It's a wash. This, in the wake of 9/11, nothing, no, or very few contrails over the states. And our diurnal change, that swing from the daytime high to the nighttime low, that opened up by 3 degrees. You take away the trails, the days will be warmer, and the nights will be cooler.
We go next to Alex in Chino Hills, California. First-time caller. Alex, thank you for calling. Go ahead.
Yes, just calling, on our day-to-day awareness of these chemtrails, how is it possible that we could be being experimented on? And I don't see no public outrage. I see nobody really talking about this when we're just, I feel, violated on a day-to-day basis with these chemtrails.
Yeah.
Scott, I'm beginning to think that the coast-to-coast listeners may be the only ones who are tuned in to the possibility of chemtrails. Whether I go to speaking engagements, events, or this program, they know what's going on out there. But most people, they don't know. They don't even notice them.
George, this tells me that you have done your job.
Well, Well, I hope so.
You're getting the message out there. You're getting these topics into the people, and they're receptive. And this is all I think we can do at this point is just continue to expand the awareness. Expand the awareness. And when you're looking at the trails, notice where they intersect. That's the big clue as to what they're up there, why they're up there. If you see across a big old T up there, see what's happening at the place where those trails cross. That is the key thing, because there's always something happening. Something is happening to the trail. It's fading. It's dissipating. It's augering. It's compressing. It's folding. It's doing something where the trails cross. That's the big revelation for the weather guys when they finally decide to look up.
We've got a source who may be onto a pilot of chemtrails, and he may want to go public. So we shall see what happens there.
I'm interested.
Yep.
I'm interested.
Let's go to Clearwater, Florida. Chris is with us. Welcome to the program, Chris. Go ahead.
Well, until we follow the Canadians' model of suing suing against the chemtrail, I think we can take some remediation. I've come across what Dr. Gwen Scott has stated, and she's a former CNN anchor, by the way. I'd like to see if you might like to have her.
Sure.
She recommends food-grade diatomaceous earth to fight the Morgellons disease, which she says we are all infected, but not all are symptomatic, as we can show with a red wine and peroxide test. She says to take a tablespoon twice daily on an empty stomach of the food-grade diatomaceous earth. And also colloidal silver can be helpful, but that's a little more expensive. And the drawback, though, with food-grade diatomaceous earth is that it can destroy the natural probiotics, so you want to replenish those beneficial bacteria. And then we have Oregonite, and as well as just a good old-fashioned pranayama that I've practiced and seen others encourage what are known as sylphs or sky spirits that actually will come up and truncate and remove the chemtrails. So when they see there's a great intense love of life, they, from my experience, will come and remove the chemtrails, these sylphs. So I was curious what your guests would have to say about those comments.
It's almost like a filter, Scott, a human filter.
And it was funny. It was those sylph-type clouds that were taking direct hits from these planes, one after the other after the other. And when I was starting to put up time-lapse, you know, cameras back in 2004, see these sylph-like clouds come through, boom, plane right through the middle of it. The next one right through the middle of it, leaving a segment of a trail. The whole trail wouldn't persist, but just a stripe right in the middle of these clouds. And that was enough to flip the switch to me, like, it's clouds. They're leaving these marking nanoparticles in these clouds so they can ID them. They can see how they float, see how they move and drift. And the diatomaceous earth is good. I've got, you know, every bit of 150 pounds in the house. I use it. I use it. I use it on the plants. I use it on me. It's good for bringing out those heavy metals and those toxins.
I used to have a pool a long time ago on my little horse farm in Illinois that had one of those filters like that, an earth type filter.
An earth pipe filter. Yep. But diatomaceous earth is something you can get 50 pounds delivered FedEx anywhere in the United States and have your bill come to something on the order of $50. It's very, very reasonable.
Let's go to Austin, Texas. Becca is with us. Hello, Becca.
Hi. Thanks for taking me on the show.
You're welcome.
Listen, yeah, I had a question about, you were talking about water vapor trails and such, and I was wondering why no one was mentioning the aluminum and the electromagnetic stuff with HARP. And well, I really wanted to know how those two are connected, and also about the little particles of plastic that are coming out of people's bodies. What's that disease?
Morgellons.
Yeah.
The little fibers.
Talk about those things.
Oh, that's a Gwen Scott topic. She's a great lady.
Yeah, she sure is. But this is a first HARP question. I was wondering when it was going to come up.
Exactly. It didn't take too long, did it?
No.
No, it didn't take long. No, those vapor trails are laced with these metallic particles, whether they're barium, strontium, you know, aluminum, and then a host of other trace particles, much like the fracking fluid. I'm not drawing a comparison, just saying that the vast majority is liquid, and the rest are these ride-along particles. And it is these ride-along particles that you can see from space. So you can see the moisture then being drawn to the trails, or the strontium could show up very clearly if that's what you, that the kind, that's the filter you're looking through, or aluminum or barium or whatever. It gives the military a real-time ability to survey the atmosphere. It's elegant. It really is elegant. And then this is work that was all done in the 50s and 60s and then experimented and deployed in the 70s and 80s. So they've got a very extensive track record in perfecting this work.
Wilson, North Carolina. Alan's been waiting for us, and there he is. Hi, Alan. Go ahead.
Hi, how you guys doing tonight?
Okay.
Good.
I'm glad somebody brought up the question about Hawks. I have one last question to ask. But as far as that, from what I've heard is that the metal particles that they spray in the sky, along with a HAARP, it helps generate a charge to where I guess they could probably harness the power of a storm. Because I believe they say it's about 1 billionth. I think one billionth of a gigawatt amp is what it generates when it's projected up into the sky.
How powerful is that, Scott?
That's more juice than I've got coming out of my hands. Well, no, it doesn't take that much power. It really doesn't. This atmosphere is so balanced. The Earth's biosphere is so very balanced. It's just a little tweak one way or another, and it is sending it out of balance. And maybe that's what the French foreign minister was concerned about. Maybe he was calling out the Americans and the Russians and whomever else is in on this program, that we're pushing the planet's atmosphere to a breaking point, to a limit. And maybe that is actually the design, so they can get some aspect of chaos. And they can roll out whatever agenda that they've got for us, but that is a lot of power. And I was looking out of the clouds today, and so many of them have been hit by some kind of change in ionization, to where the tops of the clouds are diffused and look like they're being. Let's just say you're taking a balloon and rubbing the top of your head, and you know how your hair
gets all static.
Yes. That's exactly what the clouds, the tops of the clouds look like. It's all just hairy. The definition at the base, the definition at the top is lost. It's like there's this shock that has been applied to them. And in time-lapse imagery, you can see these shocks come. And then the cloud folds over on itself, and then there's a turbulence underneath, and then the virga drops out.
Well, we're going to see what kind of year we're going to have weather-wise. Scott Stevens, Scott's website, Weather Wars. .info linked up at coasttocoastam.com. I'll be back in a moment with Kevin Randall, and we're going to talk about government UFO files.